Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, 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 oh. Wake up. Time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Gotta change it, yeah. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we're just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right. Wake up, everybody, to missing pages of history. We're going to continue down the road of filling our missing pages because we want to make sure we wake everybody up. Today, on the 27th of August, 2022, we will dedicate this program to the life of Dr. Sabi. a missing page of history. Along with this delegation, we delegated this program to Dr. Sabe. Along with this particular delegation, we also went to acknowledgement to one of our dear co-founder, producer, and host, Emmanuel Daniel Joyner. We'd like to have you to join in with us by dialing in at 818-337-0016 as we discuss the timing events and issues and to help us make our contribution to build better communities for our people and humanity. This is the voice of MPH Radio. And like always, we're going to start out our program with not only just welcoming you again to MPH, but we also want to give you something to think about. When we talk about giving you something to think about, we can talk about this concept of freedom, which is often talked about, fought about, died over, and continue people are dying over this concept. So we just want to give you something to think about when we talk about this concept of freedom. What is it? Well, according to Maya Angelou, she stated that do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, you'll do better. That was her response to this concept of freedom. Also, we have Aretha Franklin, who stated, we all require and want respect, man or woman, black or white. Is our basic human right. Let me repeat that again. We all require and want respect, man or woman, black or white. It's our basic human rights. That was Aretha Franklin's concept of freedom. And Florence Kennedy said it real succinctly. She stated, don't agonize, organize. Don't agonize, organize. So we have given you three particular concepts of various historical figures who gave us their understanding of what they mean by freedom. What is yours? This is Missing Pages of History. And at this particular time, what we're going to do is we're going to go to Brother Alex. He's going to give us a message to the community. And with that, we will come behind that message with some acknowledgement and discussion on the memories of Emmanuel Daniel Joyner. Brother Alex, we'd like to now welcome you to MPH Radio. And what is your message today to our listening audience? Brother Alex, the mic is yours.
Well, again, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Lee, for having this opportunity to even speak to the listeners and callers today. And I would like to thank Susie for all of her work and dedication that she does to the show and all and everyone that's associated with helping you. Because this past week has been a hard week on me because, yes, the transition of my brother, of him moving on and me having to accept something that some of us take a long time to get over grief and a lot of us never get over it. And I'm at that stage now that I just ask for your prayers and your dedication to do some of the things that my brother had mentioned to us many times on many shows with you, Mr. Lee, to just carry on his legacy of knowing that we are good people. Our history is good history. It may have been reported and distorted, but we have good history. We not only are inventors, scientists, doctors, lawyers, financiers, great athletes, historians, but we are good people at heart with good intentions. And history has distorted that image. So all my life, I have been involved with numbers and facts. I could count from 1 to 10. Before I could walk. I knew how to say mother and father and had siblings who loved and helped and support me. Numbers became easy to me all my life. My name starts with an A, which is the first letter of the alphabet. So in school, I was usually the first kid called on for questions or answers. Also, I was usually first in line to go and play and walk to the cafeteria, my favorite memories in school. In formal education, I learned a lot about numbers, and I thank the math professionals who taught me to further excel at something I enjoyed with a passion. Today, I still count faster than a calculator. I usually know the amount before I check out at the store. As a business partner and project manager, controlling cost is a must. It makes my proposals more realistic and less guesswork. Numbers control our lives. We start with a birth time and birth date, and we die with a time of death and deceased date. We are given a social security number to track our every move in life. We use it to get various ID numbers and driver's license and a passport to travel. We assign numbers by health and hospital service to provide information for our health insurance policy. Our addresses begin with numbers. Our devices and phones are all registered and controlled by numbers. We cannot survive without numbers in our lives. Time clocks full of numbers control our very lives from the moment we wake until the moment we fall asleep. Man cannot continue evolving without numbers and the statistics they show. I have learned that man's DNA existence started in Africa and so must have the counting of numbers. 1 + 1 = 2, and that is no conspiracy. The internet is a search engine of information, yet the research site you may visit may be full of inaccurate or false information. I have gone to the actual libraries and archive centers and have discovered missing or altered text or content, especially if they are numbered wrong. There are things that someone does not want us to know the truth about. That is why I treasure this show with a passion. Missing pages of history. Just that idea alone gives me a passion as a researcher of world history to want to contribute in any way I can. So I appreciate all who listen and call in to help us unlock our minds from the burdens of not knowing our true history, which started thousands of years ago before European history. The truth seekers, such as me, are in the forefront to help us understand and find common ground to overturn opinions and thousands of laws that have stood for hundreds of years because of the percentages of numbers that were used to say we were violent, could not read or learn, and should always be considered second-class citizens or three-fifths of a human being. Numbers tell your past and can decide your future. The number of unnecessary deaths and the incarcerations of the people of color in prison should be unacceptable to us all. I ask you, my brothers and sisters, to join me in this quest to right these terrible wrongs to zero, because numbers don't lie. Give me just a second. Ooh. Almost anything we do or read involves numbers. We have to be careful how we use them. Some people give misinformation and try to back it up with false numbers. We now live in a society in the United States that sees a changing population of mixed race people, and they do not like the numbers estimated by the government. I again thank Missing Pages and the listening audience for giving me this opportunity, because it was inspired by my brother Emmanuel, or as most knew him as Danny. We often would discuss with me or others and talk about numbers don't lie. I thank God that I had a brother who cared enough to tell me about the importance of numbers. He often said that we take numbers for granted in our lives, but they mean so much to our everyday existence. From the time we rise in the morning until we fall asleep, our lives are controlled by numbers. We cannot go a day without seeing a saying of numbers. They are everywhere. Yet people use numbers to inflate prices or lower their age when asked. The number you see when you step on the scale is your true weight and not a lie. The numbers on the remote control select the channels you want to watch. The face on your watch lets you know if you are late or early. Hotel numbers, flight numbers, car rental reservation numbers all confirm our movements as we travel. Card numbers can bust the budget or carry us over to our next paycheck, which has different numbers on it. The most important number on your paycheck is our net pay amount. America was once called the melting pot because so many worldwide immigrants, native people, and millions of kidnapped slaves form a unique country of so many different races, and the American dream was born. Each person was considered to have contributed and united his or her talents to the many others who labored to make the capitalist society of America grow beyond all limits. Congress has always been controlled by older, wealthy men who could never set the common man rising to his level. Laws were passed to disenfranchise many so they could not succeed. Laws are always passed to benefit the rich, but the large number of the poor people receive nothing. There have been so many poor people campaigns. The plight of the oppressed people is great. Some estimate that over 50 million Americans live in poverty in the wealthiest country in the world. Last month, another march was held in Washington, D.C. One of the first and most famous marches was the Poor People's Campaign, envisioned by Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Though Dr. King was killed months before the march, the resulting effects turned those civil rights movements from just being about advocating a platform for only racial equality to one that incorporated interracial class issues and economic goals. The people of color of this nation have a stake in their future for better laws and schools for their children, better jobs and living conditions are sought by many. Better health care and political positions are a desire for many. The poor people demand to be heard and represented for their struggle to survive in a country that did not include them in the original Constitution. The 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments that were added are under threat and have been weakened by the Supreme Court and Congress. Who cares now about the poor? Are we not our brother's keeper? I talk to Emmanuel often about what it takes to end poverty. We had some in-depth conversations because my brother had done well in life. He attributed his wealth to hard work and faith. He had confidence in himself and tried to make the best choices he could. He had a financial plan for success, and he stuck to it. He made tough choices and took some risks. He climbed a ladder of success at work and was well represented by his friends and peers. Emmanuel listened and gave advice to anyone who was serious about changing their future. We are all born with curiosity and need. We can all work together and succeed. I miss those late night talks with my brother. They were full of insight and numbers. We always came into a joint agreement that some people would finally see the light, about 30%. And other people, about 70%, would remain poor to support the wealthy. Yes, statistics, percentages, quotas, and formulas all prove that there will always be poor people to cater to the rich. Only in death does money not matter. But you must be in that number to enter heaven. I pray that I'm in that number. I have faith that it isn't a lie. This writing today was dedicated to Emmanuel D. Joyner from his siblings Jesse, John, Armstead deceased, Carver, Bessie, Maxine, Eva, Mary, Renee, and Krikor. We ain't number 12 from our mother, who gave birth to the most children by a woman at our segregated hospital. Emmanuel was a brilliant man who gave all he could to help anyone who wanted to be successful. I learned so much from him. Exceptional. Again, I thank you, Mr. Robinson, and the listeners for giving me a chance to enlighten you about a good man whose time and history will never be forgotten. My brother Dan was the numbers man. And I'd like to thank you, family, for listening.
And on that note, we have just heard a commentary from Alex Joyner as he talked about one of our co-founders of MPH Radio, producer as well as co-host, Emmanuel D. Joyner, who was born on the 10th of May, 1945, and he made a transition on the 22nd of August, 2018. What we're going to do right now for a few minutes, and remember, Emmanuel, we're going to open up our lines for folks who may want to make a statement or something in terms of our memories of Emmanuel D. Joyner. We now go to our member and contributor, Susie. Susie, how would you best remember or what thoughts you have on Emmanuel Daniel Joyner that you would like to share with our listening audience?
Hello. I'd like to say Emmanuel had the heart that cared completely. He had the smile that brought so much pleasure. He had the love that brought joy beyond measure. And he won't be far away, for life goes on. Just listen with your heart and you'll hear his love all around you. May his memory be a blessing. He was a nice individual to know and to get to work with, and he's dearly missed. Emmanuel D. Joyner.
Thank you, Susie. We're going to take this caller. Call 6029. Welcome to MPH Radio. Your thoughts on Emmanuel Joyner and his legacy. 6029.
Yeah, well, you know, personally, you know, I didn't know Mr. Joyner that well. I have had previous discussions with him on this very same program where we disagree philosophically. I think in terms of intent, I think his heart was in the right place. I think he legitimately was in the interest of African and the struggling people in the society. And I think he fundamentally understands that there's a system in place which stated that certain accomplishments had to be achieved in order to live that American dream. So I think in his mind, he felt that in terms of achieving the American dream, a lot of problems that poor people or African people and specifically in terms of being able to achieve all those things they want in life, I think, and to the extent that we could achieve, perhaps he thought to the extent that we could achieve those kind of presets established by the system in terms of living a good life, that we would be well on our way in terms of bringing about the kind of results that we sought. So in that regard, I had a lot of respect for the man because of the fact that he attempted to articulate what he felt was the interest in terms of African people, in terms of our struggle here in America. So that alone, you know, I have to give the brother respect. And clearly, you know, any voice that articulates the interests of African people and or poor people is a voice worthy of listening to, and certainly his voice will be missed. And so again, I just want to take the opportunity to express, my appreciation for the role that Mr. Joyner played during the time of his existence here on this earth in terms of being able to clarify the situation as it confronts African people in the society.
Thank you, Carl. Let's go to caller 4298. Caller 4298, any thoughts on Emmanuel Daniel Joyner, 4298.
Yes, thank you. Brother Dan, Emmanuel, I had the opportunity to listen to him on a number of shows on Missing Pages of History over the years, and certainly he was educated and a meticulous researcher. He usually had some facts about the economy and statistics, etc. He was like Martin Luther King said, you had to stand for something or you fall for anything. Well, he stood, I believe he was with Dr. Martin Luther King and that all here and now, we want all our race, we want them here and we want them now. I think that was his outlook, and he is missed. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. What I would like to add, my little two cent worth, as I think about Emmanuel, is that he was a heck of a storyteller. He could tell some stories and could make it laugh at the same time. But also he was a conscious person in terms of knowing how things run in this world, the things we don't see behind the scene, knowing how power implement itself. He's very keen in terms of how power implement itself and its interests. I mean, how to maybe best fight it. But more importantly, when I think about Emmanuel, was he was actually a trendsetter. Most people don't realize in all kind of fields. I know in the field of entertainment, he was a trendsetter in the area of promotion. He was a heck of a promoter. Many people don't know that he promoted professional boxing matches. He was one of the first ones that promoted a live outside concert in a football stadium, Memorial Football Stadium in Baltimore, with Marvin Gaye, with a helicopter coming down, with Marvin Gaye getting out the helicopter. That was the first time someone saw that type of promotion. And those ideas for Emmanuel. You know, he worked in the post office. He innovated all kind of ideas. So he was an innovator in all sorts of areas that people have not really given Emmanuel the credit. So these are just some of the many missing pages of his history or the contribution that he had made to humanity. But in all, he was an excellent planner and organizer. He was an excellent planner and organizer. And it's the lack of organization today that is affecting our people the most. So with people like Emmanuel, we're most definitely going to miss him. But we remember his legacy and try to do the best that we can by giving him or giving our people the best that we got. And that's what he preached. That's what he wanted to do. And for you, just give it your best and nothing less. So that's how I will remember my brother, Emmanuel. And Alex, on behalf of the family, we'll give you the final thoughts on how you remember your brother, your brother, on behalf of yourself and your family members. And then we'll continue to move forward as we're moving to the life of Dr. CB. So, Brother Alex, you'll find the thoughts on the memory of your brother, Emmanuel Daniel Joyner.
Well, Mr. Lee, I would like to say, first of all, thank you for all your wonderful comments. Because no day that I wake that I can say that I don't miss my brother. And if that's either one of them. And it's hard because we had a good relationship and we had a relationship that most people probably can't even understand, because when you're talking about people that know history and know something, and when, as they say, great minds come together, and my brother had a great mind, when great minds come together, you know, you can find answers and solutions. Take money and finances to move mountains, yes, because this country is so far lost in its treatment from 400 years of bondage. And we constantly talked about how our race could move forward, voting rights. And I said, the poor people, the homeless. We had so many conversations, intellectual conversations, that they carried me from day to day when I listen to people comments about different things. And I often think of, what would my brother's reaction be to a foolish statement that that person made? Because I know that they didn't do the research like my brother did. They didn't put the numbers together. And so they're all over the place, just as many politicians and people are today. They're all over the place. So on behalf of my family, I would like to say thank you again for remembering someone that tried his best to help anyone, even if he didn't even like you. And there weren't too many people my brother didn't like, but because of certain things you did, he didn't approve of. And it's not a guide maybe for all of us to live by, but discipline, respect, honesty, trustworthy, they're good values. We've lost good values in this country. Our worst thing that we have to look at today, that trust is not there that was in our neighborhoods before. The trust is not there between child and parents. The trust is not there between the teachers and the parents. The trust is not there between the police and the community. And the trust is not there between government and the people. So we got so many values to work on to bring about. And I think if anything my brother would want that us to accomplish is to get out and vote this coming fall. Because that was one thing that he so encouraged me to do, to make sure that I voted. Early voting came about. He was about it. His wife, Rita, she served at the polls. They were involved because we can change some things. We can't change everything, but we can change some things by voting, by being represented, not just walking away and say, you have your way. Because when we walk away and don't vote, we say that the other side can have their way. So please represent yourself this coming year and represent the memory of my brother by going in there, casting your ballot. And that's the last thing I have to say for the family. And thank you.
And thank you, Alex. And to add one other point in terms of an idea that was held very dearly to your brother, was that in last years, we were plotting to take a trip to Cuba. He felt like the African community should take a trip to Cuba and see for themselves. We were planning on to do one a year prior to his transition. So to fulfill his thought and his last things on his bucket list, we are asking the MPH family and Mary and Joyner to help us organize and mobilize a delegation to Cuba in January, the 23rd to 30th. And remember, it's Emmanuel. So we'll be contacting you. We'll be building and mobilizing. And this is something that we want to do in his honor. So please, listen, audience, keep that in mind. Contact us. And there are many lessons to learn and will be learned by traveling to Cuba, and Mr. Joyner knew that as well. So in remembering Mr. Joyner, on the 27th day of August 2022, we will close out this program with some music that will reflect the kind of attitudes and ideas of Mr. Joyner. And when we come back, we'd like to have a discussion on our theme today, which is the life of Dr. Sabi, a missing page of history. This is MPH Radio. We'll be right back, and we can start off giving you the best that I got, because this is something that Mr. J, that we call him, Mr. Jordan, would do. Back to MPH Radio. That's right. In honoring and memory of Emmanuel Daniel Joyner, he will want all of us just to give us the best that you got. Welcome back to MPH Radio. Before we make our transition to that major theme today, the life of Dr. Sabi, a missing page of history, there's one particular black man, in fact, I would like to share with you. They were written on the 22nd of August of this month, the same day that Emmanuel made a transition. That's something that he'll probably will acknowledge. And we just want to share this little clipping with you that came from the Yahoo News, titled All Black Female Crew Operates flight to honor Bessie Coleman. It reads, American Airlines celebrated 100 years legacy of Bessie Coleman, the first black woman to earn a pilot license in a special way. The airline honored Bessie's legacy by hosting Gigi Coleman, the late pilot great niece, on a flight from Dallas-Fort Worth to Phoenix that were operated by an all-black female crew. From the pilot to the flight attendants to cargo team and maintenance technicians, there were 36 women listed as members of the historic flight crew on American Airlines website. So we thought we just highlight that for whatever it's worth. But of course, we're always happy to see sisters, not to just be first, but to do those things that anybody else can do. So we tip our hat to that particular crew and always to all sisters who have made a contribution to make life better for all mankind. This was just one of our little black mini facts for today's program. We got transition to today's program, The Life of Dr. Sabi, A Missing Page of History. And for those who are listening, we'd like to share with you to join us for dialing in at 818-337-0016 and share your thoughts. Given what's going on today, dealing with this whole question of health care, this question of the coronavirus, and this whole question of the pharmaceutical company and medicine, we thought it was very fitting to make sure that Dr. Sabi, a story, which you can hear and see the entire story on YouTube, please check that out, this documentary, The Life of Dr. Sabi, on YouTube. But we'll discuss some issues, some points that we think are very germane today that we need to not to let these issues of concern die out. For many times in this society, we hear the truth, we don't hear it enough. You still forget about it or won't pay attention to it because you are drowning so much with misinformation and disinformation, particularly when it comes to Africa and African people. Now, one of the things I'm going to ask my participants today to do is to follow and discuss some of the particular points of interest that we would like to now have this discussion, and hopefully we can get some clarity to the listening audience and the rest of the world in terms of looking at Dr. Sabi and his contribution, particularly as it relates to the medical field and medicine. Now, with that documentary, I thought it would be interesting, and my first response I'd like to get everyone respond to, start with you, Alex, then we'll go with Brother Haki, Susan, and Brother Moses. It started off with a real interesting quote when you look at the video, which I thought was very profound, and that gave you a better sense of the importance of the contribution of Dr. Sabi. The quote is, "A society that keeps cures a secret so that they can continue to sell medication for huge profits is not a real society, but a huge mental asylum." Let me read it again. "A society that keeps cures a secret so they can continue to sell medication for huge profits is not a real society, but a huge mental asylum." Alex, your response to that particular statement?
Well, my response to that, after reading the article and getting a little bit more familiar with everything, because when I first started out, I was also in the pharmaceutical industry. And it was one of my best jobs, I guess you could say, because it was an easy job. And when it comes to healing and curing people, it's something that we have not taken seriously in this country, though we have all these hospitals and all these doctors. That I found about while working was the main thing was doctors and hospitals are running a business. And when you have someone on the outside who can bring in cures and can do things much under, you know, that rating, then that makes a huge difference. So when they continue to do that, then that makes a huge difference. So we got to a point there that, you know, all the meetings we had at work and everything, it was all centered about, you could say, almost something faith healers and people with herbs and all kinds of ideas. And as they pushed their thoughts forward, then we found out a lot of their remedies and all these herbs that you could take were good. And so this is one of the gentlemen that also that we had material on and that the FDA and different ones had did studies on. And we get to a point to say, this was good medicine, but it wasn't good medicine to make money on, because we had to sell you pills. We had to sell you chemicals to inject in your body. So I like to turn everything over and listen to the different, you know, comments, you know, from other people, Mr. Lee, and enjoy myself, because, like I say, this is something that I treasured on one of my very first jobs, and that was healing people, people that were sick, people that were looking for a cure. And we were just giving them a temporary reprieve and not really curing them, but just doing enough to keep them coming back and forth to the doctor from month to month. Medicine has a long way to go to take care of all the ills that are there. And I'm just hoping that the young doctors who are listening also investigate and look at Dr. Sebo's work and understand that portion of it, of what he was trying to do, and maybe use technology and medicine together. But for thousands of years, we only had the herbs and spices, and it worked well. So, you know, let's hear some more comments and see what other people have to say.
Brother Hackey, Brother Sabi, Dr. Minstad's love with the statement, which I thought was very profound. A society that cures a secret. So they continue to sell medications for huge profits. It's not a real society, but a huge mental asylum. Your response to that statement, Brother Hackey?
Yeah, well, I think he's absolutely correct. There is a bit of a paradox when we talk about, you know, Western medicine. One thing we have to understand is that when we talk about a market-based economy, when we talk about the fact, you know, that pursuit of profits are more important than anything else, that means that when we compare the functioning of the marketplace with the value of humanity loses out, which means that when it comes to healthcare, in terms of, you know, innovating, you know, cures to in the benefit of humanity, loses out simply because, you know, if you in fact cure those things that plague humanity, then you undermine your ability in terms of making money. So the function of the market-based economy seeks a function. And the irony is that when you talk about a market-based economy and everything is predicated on profits, then the reality is that the natural implication is simply to abide by those rules of the marketplace. And by abiding by the rules of the marketplace, it ensures profits. And after all, that's what it's all about. So that's a real paradox in terms of when you talk about the problem in terms of a market-based economy in terms of the pursuit of real cures as it plagues humanity. Now, one of the things when we talk about the market-based economy, also we can't dismiss the fact that when you talk about, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars being generated in terms of prevention of cures that plague humanity, whereas you and I might see this as fundamentally insane, but those individuals who benefit from such a system, then certainly those kind of metrics make sense in terms of the ability to manufacture or to generate billions and billions of dollars. In particular, when we talk about the cancer in American society, cancer generates tens of billions of dollars, not only in terms of research, but also in terms of medications. So the bottom line is that if you talk about a market-based economy, if you're talking about essentially destroying, you know, that industry, it's not going to set well with people who benefit from investments in cancer. So clearly there is this sort of clearly that's an incentive for those people who in the cancer industry to withhold treatment in terms of maximizing profits. And that's what's been peculiar to a market-based economy. Also in context of, you know, one thing we talk about dialysis, and we talk about the peculiarity in terms of the disproportionate amount of African people who are on dialysis, even though we're something like 12 to 16% of the population, we disproportionately the people receiving dialysis. And so the question becomes, you know, why is this, number one? But more importantly, when you think about the kinds of dollars and cents being generated, you know, from dialysis, the reality is that in the context of a market-based system, do you really think there's a real incentive in terms of ending that profitability? So I think that to a large extent also, if we think about the fact that we think about the racial component in terms of how America is organized, and when you talk about the disproportionate number of African people on dialysis, and you talk about it disproportionately impacting African people, then that alone is going to be enough to sway people from actually innovating a cure out of the guys that simply are the guys that, you know, because dialysis is a cure unique to African people, then there's therefore no need in terms of innovating a cure simply because their lives don't matter in the first place anyway. So this is the paradox in terms of a market-based economy when we talk about human health. And so the thing that Dr. Sebe talks about in terms of his, you know, his quote, he's absolutely correct. When the final analysis, when you look at all the things he's done, and we look at it in terms of the function of the society, it's insane. It's insane. Only people who somehow brought into this notion that human worth is based upon dollars and cents, only those individuals are capable of believing, you know, that people, you know, burdened by sickness is a benefit as long as they profit, you know, monetarily. So clearly, his quote was on time, and I agree with it wholeheartedly.
Brother Moses, your thoughts on this quote as relates to cure versus making money off of selling medicine?
And that's the fundamental contradiction within capitalist society. People before profits is the issue, the capitalists always go with the profits. And so, you know, he's pointing out a fundamental contradiction within the social order. It's undeniable. Certainly, like the incentive to cure people is and when you got this big industries and this big corporations, these big institutions which are set in motion and are compounded each year their interest in terms of research and development and you know, input of investment into their role, their business model, which is making pills and et cetera. And so there's no incentive to go to natural roots and investigate the kind of cures that Dr. Sabi was about. There's just no incentive. I'm sure perhaps Cuba would have been a great use for him. I'm sure they would have learned something from him. Anyway, he's correct in his analysis. Thank you.
And Susan, your thoughts on that quote?
I think Dr. Sebe, which he was gifted to do the things and the creations regarding medicine. But the thing about it, when you look at the time periods that he was doing it and the countries that he was doing it in, the only thing, he died before he could really make a bigger impact over the whole world. But I think he was right, but no one gave him a chance they didn't really get a chance to really work with him to see what he was doing. Because who knows, a lot of these pharmaceutical companies may have been willing to actually come in and work with him, because what he was doing was extraordinary, that it wasn't something that was really world known. with him, and he died when he died, so a lot of information still didn't get out. You got people perpetrating that they knew what he was about and how to create these medicines, but come to find out, according to the documentary, a lot of these medicines aren't working now. They're causing problems. So I think it's just the same that Dr. Sebi didn't really get the worldwide attention that could have had some impact, even impact with the pharmaceutical companies. And that's just how I see it.
Thank you, Susie. You know, our panelists, when we look at this documentary, it raises so many issues and concerns. I'd just like to see if we can highlight some of them. Brother Alex, starting with you, when we look at this documentary, one issue Dr. Sebi raised is that when we talk about diseases, when you say something to disease, that means it should have a cure. It should have an origin in terms of how and why it came to existence. And Dr. Sebi stated that, you know, issues like milk, cheese product, meat, you know, he said those things are very acidic. They create environment acidity, which allow germs to come in, bad germs to come in, affect you and create diseases. And he talked about this whole question of mucus, the role that mucus plays. He said, well, having the mucus, you won't have to worry about catching these kind of ailments. He said most of these things are directly related to this question of the building of mucus within the body and how it affects organs and tissues, etc. Now, he talks about how you can avoid these things from happening to acquire these kind of diseases. Now, I'm just wondering, when you look at the so-called established medical field, Alex, it doesn't talk to you about the importance of finding ways to keep mucus out of your body, or the poison to make sure that your body is in an alkaline state so you can't develop no diseases or develop no viruses or germs that would affect your organs. What is it about that science that Dr. Sebi exposed to the rest of the world is not true, and why people not raising more issues about, you know, what he is saying has a history and seem more logical and better for human beings to stay well and get well? Your response, Alex.
Again, when we talk about medicine and we look at the whole science of it and the aspect of people not knowing, because again, everyone is looking for a cure. If you have cancer, you're looking for a cure. If you got AIDS, you're looking for a cure. You're not looking for just treatment. Though we know that treatment carries on maybe to a cure. But the main thing that anybody goes for is they want a cure. They just don't want to take the treatment. Sometimes the treatment is worse than the cure. So when you look at the different forms of things that attack the body and the reasons why, and yes, obesity, stress, how we eat, our diet is so important, the air we breathe, the water we drink, even at the point of his own ending of life, he would not drink the water or eat the food. Well, mostly because he was what, escaped, probably afraid of being poisoned. But not only poisoned by maybe someone there in jail, but also the poison from the area he was in. As they say, you know, Mexico, don't drink the water. You can go to some places in the world and they'll probably say, don't eat certain food. Well, there are so many things that affect us on a daily basis. And if we do not continue to control certain things that produce this extra, yes, deadly mucus, and we know what mucus is when we get a cold, and we can, sometimes we call it, we can spit up phlegm and all this other stuff. We go to the hospital and they say, you got a lot of extra fluid up in you, and a lot of that fluid came from this and came from that, came from whatever. That extra fluid, people, there's a comment sometimes, you say, people say they had fluid around the heart. Yes, mucus phlegm fluid travels all over the body, carries disease and everything from organ to organ. And that's how organs begin to shut down. We begin to get diabetes, liver trouble, everything. It begins to affect and break down organs. And once that gets into the body system, then, yes, we have to try antibodies and all this other stuff to try and fight that. But those antibodies are doing the same thing. They are also attacking the body. They're not just attacking the disease. Every medicine label that you look at has side effects. Everything that we take has side effects. But if you go out there and there's different plants and different things, they don't have side effects, different herbs and stuff. They don't have side effects. Now, if we could only incorporate half of this man's knowledge, then we could actually do something in the healthcare field. But you're talking about cutting costs massively across the board, because now you're finding common things in nature that you don't have to spend exorbitant prices over. Research. Oh, my God, research. The spending on trying to find the cure, trying to develop a drug. You can just remember just a few years ago, we were in a race to get virus control in this country and around the world. We had three companies fighting nipped and tucked, but we also had many small countries, and especially Cuba itself, that were coming up with drugs that could counteract COVID-19 and the variants. But yet and still, a lot of them weren't even considered because they couldn't make enough profit off of them. It's all about the money. It always has been. And the sicker the individual, sometimes the more willingness we're willing to pay once we find out that we may have something that may be considered terminal. Because we don't know the real meaning of terminal until it hits us. Anyone else can be suffering, and we can feel some of the suffering they're going through. But you cannot stand anywhere and say that if my neighbor's next door and they're going through any terminal illness whatsoever, that I know what you're going through until you have it. And then you find yourself willing to do anything to be cured. And that's where the medical profession, I believe, comes up very short. And knowing that there are cures out here for a lot of things, but the cure is not being pushed because there's money to be made, just plain and simple. There's money to be made on sickness. And I'm going to, again, want to turn over because I want to hear some more discussions. Everything's been going well, and I want to know some more. So I appreciate and I thank you for giving me this time.
Thank you, Brother Hackey. One of the things that we're listening in that documentary was he said some interesting things about, you know, there's no such things as viruses and germs. And he talked about the creation of the chicken. If you go out in the wild, you'll never really find a chicken in the wild. That was some animal where they created, concocted. And all these kind of eat meats, all these kind of things are things that are bad for the human body. But he also did something I thought really interesting, and I'd like to have your response, Brother Hackey. He had people like Nipsey Hussle, people like Left Eye, the singer. He had people like Michael Jackson. He had many people that came to the courtroom where they were trying to convict him as a illegally practicing medicine, who was suffering from illness based upon their clinical doctor. But when they took his herbal medicines and advice, he was a herbologist. They went back to those same doctors and they said no longer were effective. They no longer have these medical conditions. What do you draw from that?
Well, the whole case surrounding Dr. Sebe was very interesting. One of the things is that when we talk about the Food and Drug Administration actually, deciding to charge him, you know, with practicing medicine without a license, I find that very interesting. And Dr. Sebe was you know, he was only known in small communities. And so the mere fact that this notion that, in fact, that he's been able to innovate cures some very catastrophic diseases causes the DNA to actually implement, you know, legal proceedings against him speaks volumes in terms of Food and Drug Administration's position that perhaps that if, in fact, he does have cure to these catastrophic diseases, then it certainly it not only would call it would call into attention some fundamental problems in terms of, you know, how the role of medicine in society, but more specifically, call into question the role of the Food and Drug Administration in terms of inability, to raise questions in terms of medicine, which is so pivotal to the interests of people in society. So the mere fact that they went after this very small man, relatively speaking, I think first and foremost are very, very interesting. I think that the mere fact that, you know, these people, I think it was like 70 people who actually came to his trial to talk about the benefits in terms of, you know, taking his herbs. There's no question that those 70 individuals, and among them you talk about some very, you know, famous or celebrity types individuals. But when you talk about in terms of the impact, in terms of 70 people who came before the court to say that what the state perceives as quackery, these people are saying that we actually benefit from, you know, from his herbs. I think that in and of itself created real problems in terms of the overall function of the system. I think as much as they wanted to convict him and to end this what they perceived as a horror, I think that those 7 people were instrumental in terms of him being freed, because they had to do the fact that, in fact, that he wasn't talking correctly. He actually innovated something that actually of some use to people in terms of curing a lot of these catastrophic diseases. I think there's no question that once they come to the realization that, he wasn't disseminating, quote-unquote, prescriptions, once they realized this was natural, this was herbology, really the case also fell apart. So for those two reasons, I think that they were hard-pressed to convict him. But the mere fact that they had sought to convict him, I think it's very, very interesting. But aside from that, brother, the thing that I think we have to also realize that in the context of medicine, one of the things is there's a very, very strange irony. One of the things, you know, we like to believe that, in fact, that medicine is scientific. We like to believe that, in fact, that when we're told that medicine A or medicine B will cure this or cure that, we like to believe that, in fact, there's some legitimacy to it. But the problem is that the reality is throughout the history of medicine in the society, there's often been questions in terms of, you know, the efficacy or the effectiveness of medications. One of the things, if you recall back in the colonial era, one of the biggest problems in terms of as far as the slaveholder was concerned was, you know, African people actually attempting to flee slavery. And they named that dreptomania. So the signs say that anybody who sought to free themselves from slavery was, in fact, sick. And if we were to extrapolate, one of the things we have to agree that the reality is that given the fact that dreptomania, this attempt to flee slavery as a sickness, then at that point in time, if the technology had existed, then clearly there would have been some pill in which you would administer to the enslaved Africans to ensure that they don't flee their captivity. Probably some type of antidepressant, I would imagine. But also in more recent times, one of the things is that, recently the assistant of medical, she's a medical researcher, and she talked about there's no correlation between the depression and hormonal or biochemical deficits. And so despite this information, you know, the Food and Drug Administration has still refuses to come out and say that she has scientifically demonstrated that there's no correlation between depression in human beings and biochemical deficits. She has proven that. And despite that, the Food and Drug Administration has still yet to acknowledge her research. So as a consequence, today they still prescribe antidepressants for people under the guise that somehow there's some kind of biochemical deficit in terms of being responsible for depression. So I think when we talk about Dr. Sebe, I think that the fact that she sort of expanded on the theme in terms of the kind of erroneous nature, you know, of medicine, I think that in of itself, you know, resonates to a great deal. So in that context, I think that, you know, the Food and Drug Administration had a real big incentive in terms of going after him. And, of course, they were supported by a lot of doctors in terms of who also supported the idea in terms of, you know, incarcerating Dr. Sebe. But to answer your question, brother, I think that, you know, clearly, you know, the mere fact that people benefited from what he was doing speaks volumes. And the mere fact that people benefited from what he's doing can't be simply discarded simply because those musicians of power, you know, want to protect, you know, their profits. So clearly Dr. Sebe's trial was nothing short of a witch hunt, which is designed merely to conceal the ineffectual nature, you know, what we call medicine today.
Hello, Brother Haki, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yes, I got cut off. Top up all to our listening audience. So let's continue. Brother Moses, when we look at this particular video, one of the things he talks about is this whole question of, he called it intracellular cleansing, cleaning our internal body as it relates to cell, what's good for cell development. And one of the things he alluded to again, he talked about this question, what we put in our body, the meat, the milk, you know, these kind of things. And he talked about really human beings, particularly Africans, were made more to a plant eat those things that get a lot of sunlight. Do you think there's a correlation between eating plants versus eating meat? And just what's your general take when you heard him talk about our eating or lack of eating discipline in terms of we eat food that's not really happy for us, like rotten meat. Just your general response, Brother Moses.
Yeah, well, we probably do depend too much on meat and for food. We need more vegetables, I think, more living food. I agree with him on that. I would like to learn more about his underlying theories, and because, you know, he obviously was had some kind of method to the madness, and the FDA wasn't able to do what they wanted to do with him, so that proves something in and of itself. I don't know. I mean, his the people who are carrying on the work now have a lot of problems, and it's a whole lot of misinformation, and so I would like to know more about his theories. That's the problem. Thank you.
You know, Susan, in the video, and to the rest of the panelists, y'all can weigh in on this issue as well. You talk about the stomach being the center core for most things that are triggered from when the body comes from the stomach. He talked about the relationship with your stomach and your ability to see your eyes and stuff in terms of, you know, the inner lining of your stomach and what if it has the proper materials to be clean and really be functioning under those kind of things that the cells need to be healthy. What other things did you take from this video that you thought was of interest in terms of the sole question of taking care of the body that the so-called medical establishment really don't talk about? What are your thoughts from that perspective, Susie?
Okay, one thing I was thinking about, which they didn't put much in the video, but the thing that he told Lisa Lefi about what Jesus did when he fasted for the 40 days and 40 nights. And we've always heard that fasting is a good practice to do occasionally for the body, because when you talk about fasting, that means that you're getting rid of a lot of impurities. And to take and let her know to compare herself through the 40 days and 40 nights, I thought that was interesting because that's a long time period, but you have to have, you know, you got Jesus on your side. If you can survive 40 days or 40 nights, that any cleansing would definitely appear within that time period, which I thought was interesting. And then just to look at today, where you could actually go in and you can actually purchase plant-based meats and vegetables, and maybe that's, I'd have to do some more research, but I'm wondering who really started actually producing these plant-based meats and vegetables and what their reason was, and did it correlate with some of the thoughts and opinions that Dr. Sebi may have had. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Susie. Alex and Haki, if y'all can respond to this situation. Many people believe that his death was definitely imminent because when he raised the issue in Dominican Republic about all of those spring wells and water wells, the underground water that were fresh water they had in Dominican, and when big businesses were talking about coming in and want to fluoridize the water. And we know that when we look at the history of countries that use fluoride in their water, they have a high rate of cancer. Even in Europe, they refuse to put fluoride in their water. Many people thought that when he was able to convince the people not to allow them to do that, that was a kiss of death. Alex, your response to this whole question of water, fluoride in water, and for some reason, other countries that have a high rate of fluoride in water, they also have a high rate of cancer.
Okay, Mr. Lee, it always has puzzled me when you added something to anything, how well do you dilute it? When we would get huge amounts of different things that we test water, and we would test water all over the United States and all over the world coming in through the World Health Organization, and it was just amazing how, whether it was the water from Hawaii or whether the water from Oregon or the water from Florida. One of the things we always found out that they all contain a large amount of minerals. Depending on where we got it from, as long as it wasn't a private leak, but if it was public use or public consumption, just like the river that ran outside Flint, Michigan, and many of the rivers in Michigan, because Flint is not the only community that had bad water. So there were many. So it run off from all these big factories, from all this industrialization for many years in America. Our streams, groundwater has all been polluted. So it's hard to find fresh water unless you're out there at a pond somewhere, that nature takes its own way of cleansing it. So when the European Americans got here to this continent, fresh water and fresh streams and everything, they weren't adding fluoride to any of the rivers or anything here because the water was so clean and crystal clear to drink. South America the same way. And perhaps even Europe itself before they started polluting them and started putting all their waste and all out in the streets and everything so it would run off into their streams and rivers. So when you come back to say, I'm going to try and put some fluoride or Clorox or anything else that they put in well to say to make it clean, how well did that stuff dissipate? Are you the one that when you try and drink it that you may almost get a half a gallon of the mixture to make it clean? We do not know what we eat and drink in this country. We have an FDA that sanctions, goes in, looks at meat, but it's not there every day. Whether sodas are being bottled or drinks are being bottled, there's nobody to watch it every day. We depend on the honesty of the employees who run that company. But then we've heard of a thing called whistleblowers, and then they tell and say things are not being done like they're supposed to. So who can we trust when we say something is safe, safe enough to consume? That is our biggest problem all over the world, not just here, but all over the world. Because all these foods and everything that we ingest go into our body. And yes, fluoride and a bunch of other stuff is not good in certain amounts. Maybe a little bit may not hurt you, but too much will do you in. It's almost like if you just smoke maybe once a year, you're not going to get cancer. But if you smoke 20 cigarettes a day, you're pretty sure on the road to getting them. So to say what is safe as far as any contaminant, because that's what it really is a contaminant to the body, whether it's fluoride, whether it's anything that we add to our bodies, that's a contaminant. And our bodies now have to take that toxic chemical outside of it. And that's what Dr. Sebo was trying to educate us about, the contaminants that we put in our bodies, you know, through medical science, through eating every day, through breathing this air every day. We're putting contaminants into our bodies. So we have to be extremely careful and be knowledgeable and find knowledge and seek out knowledge just like you've done today and bringing us, you know, this gentleman. Because beyond you talking about him today, well, I knew about him. And I don't know if I would ever wrote about him, but it's one of those things that I am feel better today because you have brought this information to us and so that other people could know about this gentleman who did science, who did research on his own. That's one of the things that inspired me the most. This is what he did. And that, you'll see the different clips of the different phases and the different things that he healed himself of. So it's not only just healing other people. This man was able to heal himself. So that's what we need in life. We need to be able to interpret this information so we can use it in our daily lives to make assumptions of what we need to do when we go to the doctor and discuss different things of what we're taking. And then I'll turn it back over to you.
That's an excellent point, Brother Alex, about not only did he heal others, but he healed himself. He took his theory and put it in practice, and he was the first test case. So that's a very well, profound point you made. But Brother Hakeem, when we look at Western medicine and how they're dealing with us today, have we become victims of monetizing our individual parts of the body? For example, there seem to be ailments that will affect our legs, so we need to go to the leg doctor. We have ailments that affect our brain, we need to go to the brain doctor. There's an ailment that affects our heart, we go to the heart doctor. There's an ailment that affects our eyes, go to the eye doctor. There's an ailment that affects your kidneys, you go to the kidney doctors. Seems like they are taking each part of the human body and monetize it when they can make money off us. Your response, Brother Hakeem.
Yeah, it's very interesting. To answer your question, you know, you're absolutely correct. There is a certain amount of monetization taking place in terms of capitalizing off illnesses. So one thing is historically, when you go back and you look in terms of places like Kemet, ancient Egypt, and the ability of people to be holistic in terms of medicine. So you had one individual, you know, you had individuals studying the entire body. So therefore, you have a medical system in century in which there were no specifications. There was one individual responsible for understanding the entirety of the body. But that was only possible because a lot of these kind of so-called innovations that exist today didn't exist thoroughly. So when we talk about innovations today medically, a lot of these innovations have very negative impacts on the human body. You know, earlier you talked about fluoride in terms of its propensity to inflict or to present cancer in human beings. Also, you know, one of the things that when we talk about in terms of propensity, in terms of, you know, these so-called innovations in terms of doing what is good for humanity, often these adventures do the exact opposite. And that's very, very interesting. And so I think unconsciously, this whole question in terms of monetization, in terms of desire to make profit, is a driving force behind a lot of these decisions that are being made. For instance, if we talk about, in fact, penicillin and penicillin being injected into meat, the whole premise of injecting penicillin into meat is to what? To kill the bacterial diseases in the animal. That's the whole point in terms of penicillin. So the mere fact that these germs and these bacteria and these viruses exist in these animals and we consume them, it doesn't take us a far stretch to conclude that if you consume such an animal, that the repercussions are going to be a negative one. It doesn't seem to me be far stretched. When people make that claim. Also, you know, when we talk about terms of innovation of genetically modified organisms or GMO foods, and we talk about foods essentially lacking in nutritional value, has zero nutritional value. But more importantly, we talk about a technological innovation, which has consists of a molecular structure which is unstable. So you're consuming food, or it's not really food, but you're consuming technology, which is essentially destructive, you know, to the human body. To the extent that they can document in terms of the destruction of the human body in terms of GMOs is up for dispute. But the mere question is that because the molecular structure is so unstable that most scientists will agree that something is fundamentally wrong in terms of consuming a substance which molecular structure is unstable, and not to think that somehow that molecular structure is not going to adversely impact the lives of people who consume it. So clearly, but again, this unconscious motivation in terms of desire to monetization, in terms of making profit at all cost, is so much, pretty much at play. And finally, you know, one of the things when we talk about, you know, nitrates in food, and so what is the purpose of nitrates in food? Nitrates are what? Simply preservatives. That's all they are, right? So the whole point is to make sure these foods have long shelf lives. The fact in terms of they have a catastrophic impact on human body when you consume them is inconsequential. No one really cares, because the bottom line, as long as you can make the profit, as long as you can monetize the use of these preservatives, it really doesn't matter, because the bottom line is the profitability. So clearly, so this unconscious motivation in terms of pursuit of dollars at all costs is something that at some point we have to seriously take in consideration in terms of when we talk about in terms of consuming food in a society and the negative impact they have on the health of human beings.
Okay, to our listening audience, this is MPH Radio. We're talking about a documentary in which we would encourage you to go to Facebook on the life of Dr. Sabi. He's definitely a missing page of history. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we're going to ask our participants today to share some of their final thoughts on this particular documentary and what have we learned from Dr. Sabi and what we need to do to make sure that we have a brighter future and greater health as it comes to how we are being treated or being taken care of in a society that geared towards making money at all costs, as even if you have to die as a result of making money, so be it. So we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we will have some final thoughts on Dr. Sabi, his contribution to the field of medicine, and we want you to join in as well. This is MPH Radio.
Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration. walking around with their heads in the sky. Dead as a flame in the summertime. Gun control the sound of soul. Shooting rockets to the moon. Kids going up to soon. Politicians say more taxes will solve everything.
And the band played on.
Share with black folks, not of kin. I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
we'll make a better society. And if you had a choice
of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose?
If you had a choice to do right or do wrong, which one would you choose? According to the Medical Association, it's history. History is saying they would choose wrong over right. And that was a song that once stated, if loving you is wrong, I don't want to be right. Well, we said, looking at the life of Dr. Sabre, he chose to do the right thing. And from that, we must take a lesson that we must become our own doctors. Even if you have African doctors, there's no guarantee they will make the best decision for your interest, because we see now money dominates and rules everything. So in our final thoughts tonight on the life of Dr. Sabre, a missing page of history, we would like to ask our participants, what are some of the key things that we would like for this audience to remember as relates to, if you want good health, what lessons we can learn and should learn from the struggle in the history of Dr. Sabre. Brother Moses, we leave the mic to you. We leave the mic to you and let you mic up and give us your final thoughts. Things we should remember or appreciate or learn from the life and lessons of Dr. Sabre. Brother Moses.
I think, you know, we have a lot to learn from him. That FDA trial, I think that it should be a case study. We should be able to analyze the patients in there and what was the treatments, et cetera, because this is documentary of what he actually was able to do. And somehow the underlying theories need to come out. So we can know the science of what he had to do. And this is the challenge that we're faced with. I think that trial is key. But anyway, I've had a good education today, and I thank you for allowing me to be on the show. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. And we now will go to Susie. And Susie, your thoughts on what lessons and things we need to remember the most as we fill in our missing page of history as it relates to the life of Dr. Sabre. Your thoughts, Susie.
Okay, I think that one thing is we have to question, is he crazy or was he a fraud, et cetera? And that's something that each individual will have to do the research on their own to determine what they think he was. But I think as a whole, he was an extraordinary individual, and he had skills which was beyond others' comprehension. And with that, that's how he was able to actually cure those individuals who had HIV, bronchitis, blindness, mental illness, AIDS. So to be able to cure that many different diseases, he was just extraordinary, and we just need to study him more to really find out, maybe find out some of really this deep, deep secrets that only he knew. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Susan, MPH Radio. And we'll go to our participant today, Brother Hackey, your final thoughts on the life of Dr. Sabre, a missing page of history. What can we learn from him?
I think the thing we can learn from Dr. Sabre is that we shouldn't take anything for granted. You know, one of the things that this man was self-educated. Often we tend to concede, or at least we believe, that knowledge can only come from people who come from, you know, so-called prestigious universities. And so often we dismiss the genius of people simply because they don't have a college degree. So Dr. Sabre epitomizes, you know, the importance in terms of study, which he took upon himself to study, to learn. And as a result of his studying and learning, he was able to innovate and to create herbal remedies reminiscent of the same kind of herbal remedies that are utilized in Africa and for our purposes, historically in the United States, through the colonial era, African people and Indian people employed herbs in terms of combating a lot of catastrophic diseases that was introduced, you know, by the Western world. So clearly, I think one of the things Western medicine, is that when you look at Africa in terms of the prevailing kind of sicknesses that are taking place, historically there have been issues in Africa. So these catastrophic diseases that we're impacted with here in the West are now becoming visible in Africa. And to a large extent, it has a lot to do in terms of Africa embrace in terms of, you know, Western food models in which food is now pasteurized. A lot of food is geared toward, utilization of preservatives, GMOs, penicillin, all those kind of things. And the results are the African people now are suffering from the same kind of sicknesses that people in the West are suffering from. So if we don't understand anything, we have to understand there's something fundamentally wrong in terms of dissemination of medicine in society and understanding that when we talk about medicine, we're not necessarily talking about what's in the interest of humanity, but also we're talking about what's in the interest of dollars and cents. In that context, we have to be aware in terms of the very subtle danger in terms of that kind of mindset as it pertains to dissemination of medication in the society.
Thank you, Haki. And Brother Alex, your final thoughts on what lessons can we learn from Dr. Sabi and his life?
Yes. Again, I would like to say thank you. Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Thank you, I guess, because you helped me make it through another day that I didn't even want to really try and make it through. Because like I said, you know, Dr. Sabin talked about depression. He talked about grief. He talked about the mental illnesses and about life stress that comes upon us. And one of the most important things I think he mentioned was about love and about loving yourself. That's the first part of healing, is you first have to love yourself. Nobody could have sung it any better than Whitney Houston. So when we look at what we have to do in life to just survive, because we are not the people that someone else says we are. We are the people that are some of the greatest people who've ever walked this planet. The color of our skin is great. Our minds reach everywhere. We can invent almost anything. So there's no way in the world you're going to tell me that this man, as the gentleman said before, without a college degree, without all the fancy doctorates on the wall, not walking all the guarded hospitals of the world, but could come up with cure for the common man. And because that's what it's all about. It's coming up with a cure to help. Not worried about cost, but worried about you, the individual. And he was worried about himself. Again, because that's why he saw a cure for himself. Instead of putting all the poison, toxins, contaminants in his body, recommended by most physicians. So that's what we have to look at. We have to pick and choose in what we put in our bodies. Just be knowledgeable. Not saying don't take everything the doctor give you, but read it. Find out what it contains, what the medicine is all about, what it's going to do to you, whether it's going to affect your mind as well as your body. Just because you got an upset stomach, imagine what it's doing in your brain. We have to think. The first set of an onsite of something happening to us as a reaction to whatever medicine we may take, seek help. It tells you on the bottom. Seek help. Call your physician. Call poison control. Call anybody. but reach out, because you're putting a toxin in your body. When you eat a tomato plant, you eat corn or whatever, there's no warnings there unless you added a bunch of fertilizers that should never have been there or tried to super grow it in less than a month's time. Then you might want to worry about what you eat. But if it's grown naturally in nature, communion with man, see, the two go together, nature and man. The Indians have taught us this. The Africans have taught us this. Man and nature, we're one. And then when you bring spirituality into it, because we have to believe that there is something greater than us, or look forward to somewhere beyond with all the troubles of life. But to my understanding, there's nothing better in this world today than being able to love your brother, love your sister, love your children, love thy neighbor. We've lost that. And that's what the good doctor was about also, bringing back the love. Because love and faith, nature, all goes into healing. So I would like to close with that and with prayers for everybody in this nation. And I thank you all for all this heartfelt warmth that you gave me today. You've truly lifted me up. You made me feel better, and I feel stronger. And I look forward to the next show. Thank you so much, Mr. Robinson, and everyone else.
And Alice, we'd like to thank you, Susie, Haki, Moses, and all our participants and listeners who allowed us to come in their home this evening, where we speak on the life of Dr. Sabi, a missing page of history, as well as to acknowledge the transition of one of our co-founders, Emmanuel D. Joyner, who was born on the 10th of May, 1945, made a transition on the 22nd of August, 2018. We'd like to continue down this road of filling these missing pages, because by doing so, as the song said earlier, there will be no bottle confusion once our history and pages have been filled. So come and join us, support us, and don't forget, help us fulfill one of the bucket lists Brother Joyner had for MPH Radio and its organization by joining us as we go on our funeral ride trip to Cuba from January the 23rd to the 30th, 2023. Join us also to help build this organization. We are no more greater than the people who make it up. If we're going to have a great community, the people must make the community great. We need your help. We need your support. Come, email us, communicate with us. And you can do that by emailing us at mphradio@yahoo.com. Until next time, 2 weeks from now, 1 p.m., same time, same station. We will continue filling our missing pages to history, and we want you to join us and do so. So we'll leave you with these words from Alicia Keys and let you know MPH is here for all of us. We thank you for allowing this program to come into your home.
For the innocence, 'cause right now it don't make sense. right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about Chi-Town. Let's talk about Gaza. Let's talk about Israel. Right now with Israel. Let's talk Nigeria in a mass hysteria. Yeah, our souls are brought together so that we could love each other, brother. We in the nation with no support for education, 'cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about our part. My heart touch your heart. Let's talk about living. Had enough of dying. That's what we all about. Let's do more giving. Do more forgiving. Yeah.
We like to send a special message out and let our sister, Reverend Mary Hunt, we wish you a quick and speedy recovery. Our thoughts and hearts are geared towards you becoming back well again, and you will get well. And we want you to know that the MPH family loves you. We are here for all of us.
People think great God will come from the sky. away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours on earth. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah,
get up, stand up.
Yeah, yeah,
stand up for your rights.
Living on the front line. I say yeah.